Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Over the weekend, Vermont's cumulative COVID-19 case numbers crested 9,000. High numbers continue, 167 cases reported today. There are 158 deaths attributed to COVID-19, and our hospitalization rate is as high as it's ever been, according to VT Digger. Plus, the state is still tracking an outbreak linked to Christmas services at a Vergennes church. We heard in this morning's press briefing that the case count associated with that outbreak is now close to 100. I'm Jane Lindholm. Coming up on Vermont Edition today, it is our weekly health update. We're going to be joined by the Vermont Department of Health's Immunization Program Manager, Chris Finley. Christine is going to talk about how COVID-19 vaccine distribution is going and who's getting it when in Vermont. We're also going to be joined all this hour, as usual, by Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan, who can give us updates on the Vergennes outbreak, that continued high volume of cases, and how the state is handling that busload of Vermonters who traveled to the U.S. Capitol and back. Many people have expressed concern about whether these people would be following Vermont's quarantine guidelines, and how could the state be sure? Let's turn now to our guests, Tracy Dolan, Christine Finley. Thank you very much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Jane.
You know, there's a lot going on. A lot of people are finding their attention divided and their concern really raised by what's happening nationally as well as what's happening locally. Of course, we're not really in the business on this program in the health update of talking about what's happening with national politics, but in some cases they do combine. As we've heard earlier, U.S. Representative from Vermont, Peter Welch, had to get a COVID test. He's been concerned about whether he was involved in a super spreader event in the riot in Washington, D.C., when House members and other people who were in the House chamber were crowded close together, some wearing masks, some not, in trying to get to a safe place, safe from the rioters. So, you know, we start to see all of these stories overlap. They certainly overlap as well in that question about, is the state tracking the busload of Vermonters who went down for the protest? There doesn't seem to be much indication that Vermonters were involved in the siege on the Capitol. Nonetheless, Tracy Dolan, Deputy Commissioner, can you talk a little bit about how the state is monitoring those people, whether it has the bus manifest, whether it is trying to ensure that people follow the quarantine rules, and how you at the health department think about this incident in the broader context of anybody who's supposed to be quarantining?
Sure. Thanks for the question. Well, at the health department, we do not monitor people when they come back into the state from traveling. So the advice we would give anyone is the same as the advice we would give to a group going down for a protest to Washington. We would say that if you're going to travel, you should travel safely. You should be spaced. If you were to use a bus, you know, we would advise that the bus company has to follow the current guidelines for that kind of transportation service. And anyone coming back is required to quarantine for 14 days. They can test out at day 7. So the advice is not different. I do believe that our state did reach out to the bus company to provide that guidance to them and to ask them to reach out to anyone to provide that kind of follow-up guidance. And we would do that on any follow-up from a complaint. So it's not unique that they went down for that purpose from a public health perspective. So we did what we would do for anyone else. And we're very hopeful that they or anyone else who traveled quarantined when they returned.
And from what we heard today, Governor Scott said it doesn't sound like there have been any cases so far linked to anyone who was on that bus. Is that true?
That would be to the best of our knowledge. We do case investigations and we interview people, and normally they would identify. And so we certainly don't have an outbreak where we have people connected from being on one particular bus. So that's our information so far.
Listeners, if you have a question for our weekly health update, we'd love to get your call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also always send an email to vermontedition@vpr.org. We're going to be talking about the vaccine rollout, what's known so far about how Group 1A is moving through the process, and what happens when we get to the rest of the people. It's not not no longer 1B or 1C. It's sort of 1A and then everybody else, but it is tiered, and we're still awaiting more concrete information about how that is going to go, how it's going to work, how it's going to be administered. Chris Finley, maybe you could talk a little bit about when we should be getting that information. We are at VPR, and as I'm sure all media outlets are, getting bombarded by people saying, how will I know when it's my turn? How am I going to get contacted? I need this information. There's a lot of worry out there right now.
There is a lot of worry. And I think if there's a silver lining, it's the number of people that are really interested in being vaccinated and understanding the impact it can have on working us out of this pandemic. So at this point, we are vaccinating what we called phase 1A, or the healthcare workers and the long-term care facilities, staff and residents, and moving through that. I was looking at some data that's saying about 52% of EMS have been vaccinated and over 39% of licensed healthcare workers. And we know we're a little behind on data. But what we're looking at and what we clearly recognize is it needs to be made available to more people. It needs to be made available to our population. And if we're focusing on the older age groups beginning, what do I call that? Older adults beginning with age 75. There's a lot of work going on that is, I think, going to be summarized on Friday about how vaccine is going to be made available and where it will be made available. And I would just like to mention one positive thing that was just noted on a national call that they noted, in 2 weeks, they may begin to change the way that they allocate vaccine to the states, where they look at the percent that are 65 and older, and they look at how quickly you're administering vaccine. And both of those things could be positive to help us get more vaccine allocated into Vermont.
So, and just to slow down on that one, because I think that's a question people are starting to hear about, too. And there's some questions and a lot of unanswered questions that I'm not sure you can even answer quite yet, because it's not something that's been totally clarified. But it sounds like one of the things the Biden administration is considering is releasing all available doses at once to places, not releasing the first dose and then a few weeks later releasing the second dose. Right. Is that what you're talking about, Chris Finley?
So two things. One is, yes, under the recommendation that was presented today, is that they the full reserve of doses would be available for order, but they would ensure that second doses are available. We want to absolutely ensure that we keep the focus on the second dose, because the research that showed the effectiveness of the vaccines was based on two doses.
Right. And so the way this would work, the state would then have more flexibility. It's not a consideration that the state would give everybody one dose and nobody would get their second dose on the schedule that had already been determined by the studies. The idea is the state would get an allocation. Presumably more would be coming as the manufacturers make more as well. But the state would get an allocation, and then the state would be responsible for giving out the first dose and giving out the second dose based on its sort of stockpile of vaccine doses. Yeah.
Right. Very clear. So basically what I'm excited about is it looks like we'll be getting a higher allocation of vaccine. last week, we received 8,875 doses. And looking at the needs and the people that want to be vaccinated, that's a challenge. So I think I'm excited that we'll see that. But yes, we will stay focused on making sure that second doses are available for anyone who's been vaccinated, and that's a priority.
So is that better? I mean, it sounded like a lot of health officials today were looking forward to that possibility, and it sounds like you are as well, that the state would basically have the flexibility to figure out its own administration timeline and et cetera. But I'm not sure that would be necessarily the case for every state, given what we've seen so far about the rollout. Why is it better to have it that way?
What they're identifying is that they'll ensure that second doses are available. What I think that people are excited about is that it looks like it may make more vaccine available to begin to open it to broader age groups. And they may have been, I think the question is, were they withholding too much? What are we seeing? Hmm. So we'll have to see how it works out. I mean, as things have gone with this vaccine rollout, it seems to change every 12 to 24 hours. But I'm feeling optimistic about what I heard an hour ago.
Good. Well, I'll ask you at the end of the show and we'll see if you're still optimistic. You know, I mean, I think that that is part of the general anxiety that a lot of people are feeling. And it's not something that the Vermont Health Department can fix because there's it seems like the message changes so frequently. And, you know, even the way you're saying it, Chris, it's like, yeah, right now, this is what we think will happen, but we might hear something different in a couple of hours or a couple of days, or we may have, you know, the emergency authorization of another kind of vaccine within the next few weeks, or maybe it'll be a month or maybe a couple of months. And, you know, suddenly the CDC is recommending everyone age 65 and older, but maybe also prioritizing based on your occupation or your exposure risk. But that's not the way the state is doing it. But we don't really know what's going to happen with the state after those who are 65 and above have been vaccinated. So it just seems like there's an overwhelming amount of information that changes, and it's hard for people to keep track of it.
I think this is truly unprecedented. If you look and think that we had two vaccines approved within the last 8 weeks, they were approved under emergency use authorization, which we're not used to seeing. Typically, the time frame between that and approval from the CDC can be 1 to 4 months. They were approved within 24 hours. They were then shipped out and pre-positioned quicker than anyone could have imagined. And then we're dealing with shortages and trying to also communicate about a vaccine that's made differently than previous vaccines and make sure that providers understand it and make sure the public understands what they're getting. And then at the same time, new information continues to emerge. And as we get new information, things change. I mean, I think many of the changes are based on information, so that's good. But I do think that creates anxiety at a time when we're seeing a surge in cases. So trying to process and look back and say, how does this apply to me? Which piece do I need to know? Because sometimes I think it's hard to try and look at the entire picture.
Do you feel overwhelmed or do you feel good? I mean, I can't imagine being in the middle of it, trying to navigate and in some ways being squeezed on both ends because you've got all of these people in Vermont who want the details and want them now and are worried versus, you know, the information that you can or can't get at any time from the federal government. And then the state also is making plans.
Right. So within the state, there's a large group of people that are working on making this happen across everything from planning clinics to communicating to developing the dashboard. So there's an incredible commitment. And then again, among providers and hospitals, the outreach that they've done and the steps that they've taken to vaccinate healthcare workers. So the part that makes me feel good is everybody seems interested in working on it. And we routinely get emails just randomly from people that say, how can I help? So that part is good. I think making that being able to communicate that and to be able to take steps to address the needs, it takes a little longer than what I think the population would like to see.
So just before I turn away from this, so that we on this program are not perpetuating the overwhelming feeling that many people have, bottom line, more information is coming on the mass vaccination program that it will be beginning at the end of this month. Do I have that still right? After Group 1A is mostly finished. More information to come on how that's going to be rolled out, how the age bands are going to be administered, and which health conditions are also going to get priority within these early stages where people are being administered the vaccine by age. Is that all correct?
You are correct on everything, yes.
Excellent. And in terms of people not hearing anything yet, not knowing, that's okay. They don't have to have heard from their primary care provider, from any kind of state or county health official. If you have not heard anything, you are not out of the loop or not known by the state and by your healthcare provider.
That's really important to say because when we get ready to launch this towards the end of the month, in fact, even in the next week, you should be hearing information. We will make it available on mass media. We'll make it available many places. So there is no need to call your primary care provider. They have no more information at this point.
Okay. So sit tight. It's okay that you haven't been given information. And we and others are going to continue talking about this as more information becomes available. In terms of what health conditions are being considered for priority, they were delineated last Friday, I think, at the press conference, and I was behind the curve and didn't have a chance to write them down. Chris, can you tell us what health conditions are considered risky for people to then contract COVID-19 and may be included in those early groups?
Right. And so some of the conditions you might think about are diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, immunosuppression, and cancer. Some of the other ones that the CDC has identified, and there's an advisory group looking into this in the health department, are what about those that may have obesity or smoking or maybe pregnant? And so I think what is being looked at is we're trying to look at the data to identify the risk of some of the diseases like heart disease and lung disease and others on how it impacts the risk of hospitalization as well as the risk of death. And so looking at the whole picture and using the data that we have, but understand also that we only learned about this disease just over a year ago. And so in terms of the research and data that we're used to looking at some things, it's limited.
We got a note from Jeannie who says, I'm wondering what Vermont's vaccine policy is for those who have ALS. My husband was told by the VA that he would probably have his vaccine by May of 2021, and I'm hopeful the state will be able to bump that up to within the month of January or February. Also, would Vermont health policymakers also consider a vaccine for the home care providers of those with ALS?
So at this time, there's no specific recommendations based on each disease. But one of the things that's important for home care providers, yes, I think healthcare workers that work in homes clearly are part of the 1A group. And I'll also say that there's a recognition that in providing vaccine to older adults, they're not all going to be able to come to a clinic, whether at a pharmacy or a local health department or somewhere, and that we will need to make vaccine available to those homebound adults. And so there's also work being done on that.
Jeff wrote in to say, my 82-year-old friend who lives independently was called by his local hospital, Gifford, yesterday to set up a vaccine appointment for January 22nd. How is this possible if the schedule has not yet been released? Chris Finley?
Gee, thanks. I don't exactly know would be my answer. Some of the hospitals, Gifford may be planning ahead to address their patients that are 75 and older and may have done some outreach. But I am not aware of it. But at this point, I guess I am aware of it.
Yeah. Well, we'll ask you at the end of the hour. No. I think this is the part that's so confusing to people because it's like, well, my friend heard this. And, you know, my own father, this is Jane speaking, has said he's gotten a couple of notes to get prepped for the vaccine. And he's like, I don't even know what that means. I'm ready. I'm prepped. What do I need to do? So it just seems like, yeah, some people are getting information and some aren't. And that's also leading to the concern. It's like, well, my friend did this and I heard this. And, you know, it's hard when there's so much swirling information, not to say misinformation, but just if you know, without all of the details, it can be hard to understand what's happening where one person is getting something and one person is getting another.
So the silver lining I see there is it looks like our hospitals are invested in continuing to provide vaccination for those at risk, which may turn into the age groups we identify. So we'll need to follow up on that, but I take that as good news.
Deputy Commissioner Dolan, we got a question from Lucinda in Brownsville who says, as a resident of Windsor County, I have watched with dismay the rise in cases, 212 in the past 14 days as of today. Is this large increase due to a specific event or events, or is it evidence of growing community spread?
Overall, I would have to check our data on the outbreaks uniquely in Windsor. We are tracking about 44 outbreaks. But overall, we are seeing mostly that transmission is just up across the state. And so the majority of our cases now are actually primarily individual cases with some outbreaks also sprinkled in. So I'm not certain on the Windsor situation, but our cases are up across the state. And I can speak to a little bit of where we're seeing that surge come from.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Sure. So we did anticipate that Christmas might give us a little bit of an uptick, and it has. So we saw a number of days after Christmas that we did see an increase, possibly related to some social gatherings. We certainly had reports of those, and you know, we had the significant church gathering in Virgins, which has led to a large outbreak. But we also just saw generally an uptick in cases. And now, of course, we're waiting to see after New Year's if we're going to have another possible rise there. Again, some of it outbreak related, although we don't think social gatherings are driving it in the same way it drove the surge that we had after Halloween. We do think that generally we've just got more virus in our community, and therefore just more transmission in general, because we are getting a lot of isolated cases as well.
And so as far as you know, there's no significant outbreak in Windsor County that would be leading to that high number of cases over the last 14 days that Lucinda talked about.
It's possible there is. I don't have the outbreak list in front of me, so I can't speak to an outbreak in Windsor. It's possible that there might be one. Not a very large one, like a couple of the larger ones that I'm aware of, but I can't speak to whether or not there's a significant outbreak in Windsor right now.
Have there been any significant outbreaks associated with ski resorts and skiers, whether coming in from out of state or otherwise?
No, for the most part, the cases related to ski resorts are relatively small. I think we had one outbreak that was a little bit larger, more than a few cases in one area. But for the most part, the cases for ski resorts are actually mostly Vermonters or people living or working at the ski resort. What we're not seeing is a spread either from people coming from out of state or from the workers to people going back to their home state. So it doesn't look right now that the out-of-staters are actually driving transmission. We are getting a handful of cases in a few resorts, but it doesn't appear that the out-of-state piece is a significant driver.
How would you know? Curiosity here. How would you know? I mean, if a skier came from out of state and wasn't following Vermont's protocol, but came and skied and then went to their home state and developed symptoms and tested then in their home state, how would the health department know whether a case in a worker at a ski resort or somebody who works at a deli just down the mountain actually contracted the virus from a skier or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, for the most part, because the ski resorts have been pretty good about following the rules in terms of inside their lodges and people gathering together, there isn't a lot of opportunity for the staff person, for example, to have had a long period of close contact, you know, more than 15 minutes with somebody coming in to ski. So that's one way we're kind of seeing it. The case investigation interview does give us some information, but you're right. If somebody came here, went back, and then reported a COVID infection, depending on the case investigation that happens in the neighboring state, they may reach out to us if the person, or if they had a cluster in another state and they were able to identify one facility here or one location, they may then reach out to us and say, hey, all five of these cases were at such and such a resort, and then we may be able to follow up with that facility. So there are a variety of ways we may know, but there are some times when we won't know. But what we're seeing primarily is within the cases that we're seeing, it looks like it's mostly homegrown.
We have a lot more questions and calls to take on vaccines, so get ready, Chris Finley. But just before we do, while we're talking about specific outbreaks, Deputy Commissioner, can you talk a little bit about that outbreak in Vergennes linked to a couple of church services held around Christmas time that are now up to about 100 cases associated with that outbreak, most of them in Addison County?
Yeah, the case count has been climbing there, and we understand that there were a couple of church services. And so, those cases have been spreading either among people as we learn more about people who attended the church service or among their family members. So our contact tracers are busily reaching out to them, ensuring people quarantine and or isolate appropriately. And we're hoping that we'll see containment soon where we don't see the numbers continue to rise as quickly. But again, you know, just an important reminder that when we're out, wear masks, keep a distance of 6 feet, and avoid crowded places as much as possible. That doesn't change. You know, we are still under an executive order that requires that we limit our social interactions. So encouraging people to do that. And if they do need to go into a congregate area, to really maintain that space, mask, and really think about where they're spending their time and who they're spending their time with.
The Addison Independent reported that the pastor of the Victory Baptist Church knew about cases in the church community prior to those services, but also wanted to hold Christmas services for cultural and religious reasons. It doesn't sound like the church had violated any capacity rules, but has the state, is there any sanction? Is there any concern about anything that went wrong? Or that the pastor may have not made the right choice in holding in-person services when, according to the Addison Independent reporting, he knew that there were cases in the church community?
I think that we don't move towards sanctions. We haven't done that, and that would be a rare case. We do encourage people to consider other ways of gathering, regardless of the institution. You know, a lot of churches are using Zoom as a way to hold services, and particularly if you think there might be a risk to your participants or your parishioners or whatever facility or organization or service you're trying to hold, we certainly would encourage people to use that remote option, particularly if there's a risk, and particularly if your clientele or the participants are older. I mean, you know, you could hear from our vaccine approach, we're really trying to be data-driven, and we know that age is a real risk factor, which is why we're headed that way toward our vaccination program as well. So really think about the age of the people that are involved in your community or your membership, and plan accordingly when you're organizing events.
Let's go to the calls and go to Nancy, who's calling in from St. Albans. Hi, Nancy. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much. I'm wondering if it's recommended or maybe even required that a person be tested for COVID before getting the vaccine.
So you should have a negative test before you get the vaccine. Is that what you mean, Nancy?
Since I'm thinking a person might be asymptomatic and actually have it, not know it, but then putting the live virus added on to whatever virus may already be in the system might be deadly.
Okay, so two separate questions here that we should tease apart. So one is, should somebody have to test negative before getting the vaccine? Chris Finley, do you want to tackle that?
There's no indication to have testing before having the vaccine. And then I would like to clarify that this vaccine is not a live vaccine.
Right. And go further on that. So somebody who has COVID-19 but didn't know it, for example, in what Nancy's talking about here, who got a dose of the vaccine, their immune system is not going to be overloaded with COVID-19. It's not going to give them a more adverse reaction to the COVID-19 live virus that's in their system.
That's correct. I might have a job for you, Jane.
It's almost like I communicate for a living. Okay, so there is that.
That's correct, and I think it's important to address that there is no indication for testing before. If you have an active case of COVID-19, of course, we wouldn't want you vaccinated.
But why not? If it's not going to cause a problem for you in terms of your own immune response, why then do you care whether someone has it or actively has it or not?
We want to defer it until they recover from the acute illness, if there was any side effect, we might not know whether it was the disease or whether it was the illness. And it's also a challenge to the body. If your body's fighting an illness, do you want to ask it to create a response to a vaccination? So it may not help your body respond to that.
So to clarify, it's not that your body's going to be overloaded by COVID-19 because of that vaccine, but we do know that people have reactions to vaccine, even if this is not a live virus. And so you are initiating an immune response. That's the point of it. So that's part of the issue, is you don't want to be taxing your immune system.
Correct. So we know you can get body aches. We know you can get chills. We know you might have soreness. And so you want to understand, is that from the vaccine or is that from the illness? So if they have an acute illness, that's never a time to vaccinate. We don't do that with any other vaccines. But and we understand that some COVID may be asymptomatic and a person may not be having any response. But based on everything that's been looked at, there's no recommendation to do any testing prior to vaccination.
Nancy, does that help you? Does that help alleviate any concerns you had?
Immensely. And thank you for putting my question so much more eloquently than I did.
Nancy, I appreciate your call and appreciate the question. I think a lot of people are probably wondering the same thing. Let's go to another Nancy who's calling in from Rockingham. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is this. My husband and I are in our late 60s. We move full-time to our house in Vermont in early September. Medicare knows we're here. We have Vermont driver's licenses now, but we haven't set up any kind of relationship with a primary care doctor. And I'm wondering, how will the state of Vermont know that we're here and notify us when our time has come to get vaccinated?
Nancy, thanks for the call. Chris Finley?
There's going to be broad communication when there's opportunities for vaccination, whether through community clinics or pharmacies. There is some question being looked at of how residency would be assessed and understanding some of that. But I think you sound like you're all set. You're living here and you have Vermont driver's license. So I would say listen for media communication in the next week.
So you're not required to have a primary care provider to be on somebody else's books in order to make sure that you're getting the vaccine in the appropriate time.
Correct, because even though we want everybody to have a primary care provider, the reality is not everybody does.
All right, let's go to Julie in Jericho. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is in regards to travel restrictions. So I operate a vacation rental property, which was shut down in the beginning of the pandemic. And after that opened back up in June, I've been operating, ensuring that everybody who comes signs and fills out and complies with the compliance certificate that was issued by the state. But now people are coming who are saying, I've been vaccinated, I'm a nurse, so it's okay. But I don't actually see any real guidance around what to do, and the forms I don't think have been updated to account for that. So just wondering if there's been any thought and or if there's any guidance around people who are coming in who have been vaccinated around, have they gotten their second dose? How long has it been since they've received their second dose?
Yeah, Julia, I take your question. Let's put it to Deputy Commissioner Dolan. Is there any change in Vermont's rules around quarantine for people coming into the state if they've been vaccinated?
There is no change at this time in any of our travel rules or our quarantine rules. Eventually, you may see something, but there's no change at this time. So it's wonderful that people are vaccinated if they're getting vaccinated and coming in. However, that doesn't change our rules right now. And some of that is about the low uptake so far, not the low uptake, but the number of people we've vaccinated so far. And as we learn a little bit more about transmission, but eventually you will see likely some changes in the future, but not at this time.
So for somebody like Julie who owns a B&B, anybody who comes in who says, I don't have to quarantine because I've been vaccinated, even if they have been vaccinated, they still need to quarantine. They still need to follow
the Vermont guidelines.
Yeah, we got this similar question from Joy, who said, if after getting the second dose of the vaccine, would she still need to quarantine for 2 weeks after going out of state and coming back? And it sounds like Joy, too, even after being vaccinated, would still have to follow Vermont's quarantine rules that apply to everyone, regardless of your vaccination identity, for lack of
we understand that it can be a little confusing because you can feel like, well, I'm protected, why can't I? But we'll need to be thoughtful about that and understand what the research tells us. And so we really appreciate people continuing to comply with our travel restrictions and our quarantine guidelines.
Deputy Commissioner, we got a note from Brett who says, my wife works at a high-risk job. She's exposed to multiple people a week at her job. She is vaccinated. But given that there's no research about vaccination preventing transmission, should I be able to get the vaccine too?
So there is research, I just want to clarify there, and we're still learning. But is he asking if he should get the vaccination? Yes, once, depending on his group, once it's available, he should go ahead and get vaccinated. I'm unclear if the question
I think is what Brett is saying is, look, my spouse is high risk and is in group 1A. So my spouse is now vaccinated and protected, but we don't know if I'm protected. So even though I'm not in a high risk category, should I, because I'm exposed to this person in group 1A, should I get priority?
Right. So, yeah, that is a question that's come up with family members. But at this time, we are really sticking to our grouping. So it's the 1A, it's the patient-facing healthcare providers. And then as we move in, it's really about our data. Our data tells us that while a person may feel like they're higher risk because their partner is working, our data here in Vermont is really showing us where we need to bring that vaccine first. And after our 1A group, we are really clear that it needs to move toward our elderly because that's where the high risk is for morbidity and mortality.
Rick has been waiting on the line from Westminster. Hi, Rick. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. I'm a vet, retired over 75, and until your program, I have heard nothing about the VA. Everything I've done so far has been over the telephone. I'm in actually pretty good health, so I don't really even know who my primary care provider is at this particular time. I do, of course, have a cardiologist. So if it comes time for somebody in the 75 age group, which I'm in, and with health conditions, which I have, does anybody even know I exist outside of the VA?
Yeah, Rick, thanks for that. Tracy Dolan or Chris Finley, I don't know which one of you would like to tackle this. And since you're not in the studio with me because of COVID-19, I can't just have you point to each other. But it's interesting because, as we've talked about before, the VA immunization program seems to be a little bit separate from the state's program because it's administered through the federal VA. So how would someone like Rick make sure that they're on the radar of the right people?
That's an excellent question. I think he may have two options. So one is when we do the broad community clinics, I don't believe that there'll be any exclusion for people that typically seek care at the VA. So that would be one. And the second is he may be hearing from the VA in the future as the as more vaccine becomes available to them. So it's possible he may be hearing about it in the broad media where he may be eligible, and he may also have an invite from the VA.
Tracy Dolan, you know, is there a concern that this is a case where somebody could sort of fall through the cracks between a federal and a state administered program? I mean, how should Rick make sure that he's in the right queue?
No, we really want to make sure that we have all the doors open to Vermont residents. So if somebody was uncertain and thought they were covered by somebody else and they were living here in Vermont and they were a Vermonter, they should reach out to us once the communication gets going. And so, for example, if Rick is 75 plus and he's hearing about 75 plus clinics, go to our website then, register for an appointment, you know, depending on how that rolls out and our timing. So we won't leave anyone out, even if they were meant to be covered by someone else.
Let's go to Sally in North Ferrisburg. Go right ahead, Sally. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wasn't able to listen to the press conference, but someone else did, and I'm a teacher, and they had said they had heard, so I was just clarifying to see if this was true, that some ski area workers or attendants were vaccinated, and that, and then they had also heard that teachers that work with young children, so I'm an early ed teacher where I have to diaper and do bodily fluids with children, that it was just confusing to me because I was like, wait a minute, I thought we would be vaccinated. Like, I thought it was by age, and then I was like confused to hear it. So I was just, I guess, finding out if that was true, that we're skier area people vaccinated, and then why we wouldn't then be bumped into a different category. So I guess just.
Yeah, Sally, I got it. So let me clarify. So the questions that have been coming up are around ski patrollers. And this has come up for a week or so now. Partially a question like yours, Sally, why are ski patrol people being prioritized above people who are, for example, early education teachers? Or in some cases, why were ski patrollers being prioritized above fire and police officers who could also be considered first responders? AHS Secretary Mike Smith has responded in the press briefings by saying that his understanding is that those who have been vaccinated who are on ski patrol are in that first responder category that's included in Group 1A, which includes certified EMTs. Deputy Commissioner Dolan, can you provide any further clarity on that for Sally?
Yes. So 1A is around patient-facing health services. First responders are part of that. And so EMTs are part of that, and some ski patrollers are also EMT certified. And so for those ski patrollers who provide patient care in the case of an emergency, they were simply part of the first responder group. So there's nothing unique about the fact that they happen to be at a ski mountain. It's really about the first responder definition.
So is it true that then no ski responders who are not certified EMTs got the vaccine?
I can't guarantee that because in every group, there may have been a few people. You know, we were working with hospitals and they are doing their best to ensure that the vaccine goes to the right place. But we're clear in our guidance that the priority was clearly first responders.
While we're talking a little bit about ski areas, we got a follow-up email from Dan who says, where I live in southern Vermont, we have Okemo and Stratton drawing lots and lots of out-of-state visitors. I am one of only three full-time residents on my road. Every weekend, the road fills up with visitors on Friday and empties on Sunday. People are in and out of their houses all weekend, no quarantine. Some houses in town have different cars each weekend. People who work at the ski mountains say no way people are following the rules. So is the health department putting the economy first, or are we going to get stricter? Many of us are worried as the cases go up. They aren't coming out of thin air. Now, we addressed this a little bit earlier, Deputy Commissioner, but people like Dan, people who live in these communities, are expressing a lot of concern and feel like maybe the health department is not on the ball when it comes to where these cases are actually coming from.
Yeah, I would say we have a good handle on where the cases are coming from. We interview every single positive case in this state. And so we do have a good handle. And again, there may be some that are coming from out of state, but primarily this is in-state. Even at the ski resorts, the people primarily who are infected are either skiers from Vermont or the staff who are living in Vermont. Again, that's not all of them, but I do understand people's frustration, right? People have been following the rules here. We've had a good track record, and it is frustrating to see people come in and suspect they may not be following quarantine rules. All I can say is we are doing our best, and I believe ski resorts are doing their best to be very clear about the rules. But again, we recognize that that might not always be the case, and you may see signs of that. And we are certainly monitoring. If there's a change and we see a significant surge, we make adjustments, as you've seen the governor make adjustments in certain policies when we see changes in our case rates. So we are going to keep an eye on it for sure.
You know, it's interesting, way back when, which seems like about 3,700 years ago, when we were talking about the outbreak centered around some families and community in Winooski, I remember then we were talking about the fact that you couldn't necessarily get to that sort of initial case and where it came from. And frequently we see that in outbreaks. Who you can sort of see where an outbreak goes from one person to the next, but you can't trace back to how that initial person got the virus or who that initial person may have been. So why are you more certain in the case of ski areas that it's not out-of-state skiers, given that in, you know, many previous outbreaks and in community transmission, it's not always clear where you got your particular case of the virus from?
Yeah, sometimes we can locate that case and sometimes we can't. So again, in all of this information, it's rare that we're 100% sure, but based on the overall trends and the data that we have, it doesn't appear that out-of-state skiers are driving it. Doesn't mean they're not part of it. And in some cases, you know, they may be also transmitting or they may also be infected, but it appears that it's more likely based on our case interviews and what we learn about the interactions that the case had, because that's the thing we really focus on is understanding the interactions they had in the close contacts. Based on that information, it doesn't appear that the close contacts are necessarily connected to out-of-staters or even the skiers themselves. In a lot of cases, it might be staff in close contact with other staff.
I got a Twitter note from a listener who says, I have friends who work at Groundworks shelters in Brattleboro that received their first dose of the vaccine yesterday. I thought it was just healthcare folks right now. Do you know if other group living sites are being prioritized? Chris Finley, are there any other congregate living kinds of environments that are or will be or should be getting priority? We've talked in the press conferences before about prisons, which don't seem to be prioritized for the vaccine. But what about shelters and shelter staff?
At this point, not shelters and shelter staff, but through the work that's being done with long-term care facilities, that we know that vaccinations are occurring not only in the skilled nursing facilities, but in assisted living facilities and some residential care facilities, and even in some residential areas that are referred to as HUD locations. So not shelters yet, but hopefully it's coming soon, and we are beginning to at least get to some of the at-risk populations in residential living situations.
So why might some people, if what this listener is reporting is true, why might some people who work at Groundworks shelters for people who are unhoused be getting the vaccine?
Likely because we've provided the vaccine to a hospital and they may have decided to expand who they're covering is what I can anticipate, what I think might be happening.
Peter has been waiting with us from Barrie. Peter, you're on the air. What's your question?
Yes, thank you for taking my question. I was just wondering why Vermont is doing so good compared to other areas.
Do you mean doing well, yes, in terms of how our actual caseloads or in terms of vaccine distribution?
Yeah, I guess both. Yeah.
Yeah, Peter, thanks for the call. So, Deputy Commissioner Dolan, let's start with you. I mean, it is, I guess if we step back and look, you know, I think we're very fixated on our own cases within our state borders, which are rising and are alarming a lot of people. And we see the possibility of cases going to 300 a day. But stepping back out, I mean, even if we look at cases in our region in the Northeast, if we look to the North and look at caseloads in Quebec, and if we look at the U.S. population in general and different states, Vermont still is doing better than most other states. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a variety of factors. One is we've had really strong and proactive leadership from our governor and also from our health commissioner from the start, clarifying that public health will be the priority. We have a governor and a leadership that asks for the data and attends Health Operations Center briefings on a daily basis. I see the governor on the Zoom literally taking notes as the numbers roll out, asking questions. So we have a very informed leadership that has taken that data and made some really key decisions early on. I think we have a Vermont community and population that has really cooperated with masking, with distancing. You know, we've had some high cooperation. There appears to be a lot of positive peer pressure. And then there may be other factors, you know, outside of our own volition as well. But those are two key pieces for us. And, you know, and so far it's done well. And our vaccine rollout, again, we are a small state and we work well together. We have great partnerships. Our hospitals have been fantastic partners. And I know they've been really aggressive as well in trying to get the vaccine out. I'll hand over to Chris to see if she has any final thoughts on that.
Chris Finley.
I think you covered most of the areas.
All right. So, you know, more to come on this, certainly more to come on the rollout and more to come on can Vermont keep its caseload low compared to the rest of the country? And can we reduce it compared to what we're seeing within our state and what we've been accustomed to earlier in the pandemic? I really appreciate both of you being with us today, sharing your expertise and your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane.
Thanks, Jane.
That's Tracy Dolan, Deputy Commissioner for the Vermont Department of Health, and Chris Finley, who runs the immunization program for the Health Department.